You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour. My lovely co-host, Paula Luzon, is not joining us tonight. She's got a big project that she's been working on that's keeping her real busy, so she's probably not going to be with us for the next few episodes, but that's okay. It's good for her her career there, and that's what she needs to be working on. But that's okay. We're going to have some fun, and we're going to talk about some things, GOP candidates, and also the Keystone Pipeline. That's kind of a big one right there. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Of course, you know that I do support Rick Santorum in this presidential race and am a regional manager in the state of Florida, Central Region. And we are doing a lot of great things here in Florida, making some great strides in getting the word out and helping the campaign. So a lot of volunteers all across the state, pretty long list of volunteers and folks every day calling me, emailing me, asking how they can help out. So if you're interested, and you don't even have to live in the state of Florida, you can help out. We've got phone calls to make and emails to send, et cetera. So don't hesitate to give me a call if you're interested. And when I say give me a call, shoot me an email on the website at USA Talk Radio Network. You can find the address for, it's actually the usaradionetwork.com. The other way is on Facebook. You can find the American Hour radio show on Facebook. And, of course, you can always go to Twitter, and we're going to pull up some of our favorite tweets here tonight, recent tweets. You want to follow us on Twitter, The American Hour, because I put a lot of good information out for not only the Santorum campaign, but just politics in general. And I generally have links to everything that I talk about on there. So you can go read the articles, look at the facts yourself. And you know that you can't really say a whole lot on Twitter. So that's why I pretty much have a link to almost everything I put on there. In any case, let's talk right off the top about Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum article in CNN Money Today talked about what his plan is to slash taxes. And he wants to cut taxes across the board, not only just for individuals, but for businesses, et cetera. And we've had this discussion many times on the show, so I hope you haven't heard me say it before. If you have, I'll keep it brief. But corporations don't pay taxes. People pay taxes. When I say people, not people at the corporations, you and I, the consumer, we pay taxes. That's considered into the bottom line of every operating business. And I used to have an S-Corp, and when prices went up, or if I had suddenly, let's say, had to start paying some taxes, small S-Corp, you don't pay any taxes. You just have to disperse all the money at the end of each year. I was just going to pass that on to my clients. I wasn't going to pay that out of my pocket. Look at a grocery store that has maybe a 2% profit margin. If we suddenly jacked up corporate tax rates 10%, would grocery stores now just eat that and eventually go out of business? No, they pass it on to consumers. So corporate taxes are a sly government way of getting more money out of the middle class. That's precisely what it is, more money out of the middle class. So don't be fooled about that. So anyways, if you want to look at that article on Rick Santorum, it's in CNN or money.cnn.com, and it's Rick Santorum's plan to slash taxes. So let's talk for a moment about Mitt Romney, and this is along the tax theme. He's retired. I'm going to say that again. He's retired. He doesn't work for anybody. He made a lot of money, and he paid a lot of income tax on all of the money he made. Now he has investments. My parents are retired. They have investments. I'm not retired. I have investments. And the law is on investments, generally, you're going to pay 15% for those dividend returns on various investments. Now, it varies. You know, if you're a corporation, taxes vary depending on how much you make and what kind of business you're in, and there are different breaks. But again, back to the corporation thing, you want to tax corporations more. The corporations aren't going to pay. You and I are going to pay. So don't go after the big, bad, evil corporations. There is no such thing. Okay, second of all, investors. If we want to go after more investor money, so in other words, let's say Mitt Romney is paying 15% on his investments, but he doesn't work, so he doesn't pay an income tax. Well, that just doesn't seem right because he's rich. Let's jack up his investment tax rate to 25%. Okay, are we just going to target Mitt Romney or are we targeting all rich? Okay, let's target all rich. Well, what about me? What about my retired parents? My dad's a retired Air Force pilot, career military Air Force pilot. Are we going to charge him 25% on his investments now? That hurts his bottom line. So then the answer from the libtards is, oh, well, just if you're rich. Okay, so we're going to charge some people a higher rate, even though they pay a lot more, at the same percent, but they pay a lot more because they make a lot more. How is that morally? How do you justify that morally? Of course, most libtards really don't have morals, so they don't care. But how do you justify morally that one person is going to pay a higher rate on their wealth than someone else? And where do you fix that higher rate? The president would say on millionaires and billionaires. That means if you make $200,000 a year as an individual or $250,000 as a couple. Wow, I didn't know that people that made $250,000, combined income, were millionaires. So it's always false advertising by this administration, millionaires and billionaires, when they're talking about small businesses and people that are working hard. And then, first of all, Mitt Romney paid income tax on all the money he earned all those years when he was working, earning six-figure, maybe seven-figure incomes. He paid the highest rate of income tax that there was all those years. But he saved money and he made investments. Now he's going to pay taxes on them again. The second thing is any corporation or any organization that you've made investments into are going to pay taxes on that money as well. So really, may not be me, but I would make a lot more money off of my investments if they didn't have to pay taxes on the investment, whatever the instruments are or the company, et cetera. You might invest in a company like Coca-Cola. That's not just money sitting somewhere accruing or being loaned to folks. They're an organization that hire lots and lots of people. They're being taxed. If they weren't taxed at all, then they would be able to hire more people and do more and expand more. But they're taxed. And, of course, they just pass that on to you and me. And because the cost of their product is higher from the taxes, then we have to pay more. So the question is, why is it we need all this tax money? Because we've got to pay for the government. Now, what is the size of the executive branch of the federal government, including discretionary spending and non-mandatory spending? Now, that excludes the military. It excludes Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. So all those things, push them aside. What's the size of the executive branch? $1.3 trillion. That's approximately the size of, and actually slightly bigger, than Social Security and Medicare combined. It's twice the size of the U.S. military. But notice how the president has no problem cutting jobs in the military, cutting the size of the military, no problem whatsoever. But we cannot afford to cut the federal government. Oh, no. And most recently, Valerie Jarrett, advisor to the president, works for the administration, said that the direct impact of not raising taxes on millionaires will be layoffs of state employees. Layoffs of state employees. We're going to have to lay off police officers, firemen, and school teachers. But wait a minute. I thought those were all employed by the state. Yeah, that's why they're called state employees. So why is the federal government, if the federal government can't take more of your money or more of the supposed millionaires and billionaires can't take more of their money, how is that going to lay off state employees? Oh, that's right. More stimulus, more money going to the states to help them out. And what does that really end up doing? Buying union votes. We're talking about unions here. And the military, since it's not unionized, well, we don't care about them. So we can cut those jobs. Our men and women who served valiantly and fought for this nation. We don't need as many of you. But more unionized state employees, absolutely. And now the federal government's going to help keep them hired or hire more and pay for them. I really don't want the federal government paying states to pay for their employees. Let the states pay for their employees. Let the states keep more of the money that's going to the federal government. Stop taking our money, federal government. Let the states keep it, and then they can decide how to use it. But we're propping up the states and making them dependents, just like people on food stamps and welfare and unemployment and on and on and on. We just keep extending those benefits to greater and greater dates and putting more and more people on it. And the states now are becoming entitlement dependent on the federal government to keep bailing them out. And that's why Valerie Jarrett says that, in essence, the economic success of the states hinges on the federal government raising taxes. It's an outright lie. It's just an absolute outright lie. Now, the other thing that we'll see the president do is he'll compare Mitt Romney only paying 15% on his taxes to some hard-working secretary or plumber or American or even a guy like me, like a airline pilot. wait a minute. I actually earn income. It's a whole different thing. It's apples and oranges. I go out and earn income. And the government has decided that I have to pay 35% on my income. That's what the government has decided. The secretary might have to pay 20%. The reality is this. When you look at the deductions of people making anywhere from like $60,000 on up, their effective tax rate, because of deductions that they're allowed to take, all those loopholes, those terrible, bad loopholes, most people from about $150,000 on down in annual income really only pay anywhere from about 12 to 15%. So you can go look at the tax code, but we don't pay taxes based on our gross income. We pay it based on our net income after deductions. So the vast majority of Americans that are in the middle class, what we would maybe define the middle class as people making $150,000 or less, pay less than Mitt Romney. But still, it's not fair. We've got to take more money from investors. Well, what's the impact of taking more money from investors? They have less to invest. And what do they invest in? All kinds of things. As I said, corporations, it might be Coca-Cola. It might be pension funds. It might be funds that have a large amount of pension funding in there. And so what we're doing is we're saying, I have less to invest in some of these pension funds that I've been making a steady return rate of investment on. I'll have less to invest. And what happens is the people in those pensions, they don't have as much money. Their pension isn't as good. So all we're doing is harming retirees and the middle class by going after that. And then, yes, okay, let's just do it to the millionaires and billionaires. It's immoral. It's absolutely immoral that somebody else should be penalized for their success. What sort of incentive do I have to become successful and make more money if just going to have more of it taken away to balance it all out so that I'm really making, although I might be making $10 million a year, in the end I only get to keep $150,000 of it, I might as well just get a job making $150,000 a year and not worry about it all and not work so hard. It's ridiculous. So this is the class warfare that the left is engaged in and the lies that they like to put out. And, you know, when we talk about Bain Capital, we've talked about it in past shows. This is a company that goes in and finds toxic, cancerous companies and saves them. Now, what was a recent toxic, cancerous company that just wasn't going to make it that the government bailed out? Oh, yeah, General Motors. And did you know that the Obama administration hired a company called Bain Consulting, not Bain Capital, Bain Consulting, to help them decide which dealerships to shut down? Oops, cutting jobs, getting rid of jobs in order to do what? Save a company. This stuff goes on all the time. This stuff goes on all the time, and that's what Bain Capital did, saved companies. Did they profit? Of course. Now you'd say, well, the president is profiting by saving GM. Of course he is. What's GM manned by? Unionized employees. He just got himself a lot of union votes in a state that has been severely impacted by the economic downturn. So he might not have gotten money. He got a lot of votes. It was a political move that, you know, instead of the government bailing them out, let private investors bail them out and help them if they're worth saving. And that's what a company like Bain Capital does, is go in and decide, are these companies worth saving? And if they are, we can do it. And in many cases, they save jobs. And the statistics show that in the vast majority of cases, they have saved jobs, the vast majority. If they hadn't stepped into these companies and taken control, it'd all be gone. And every single job. It's just like the government saying, this company's too big to fail, we got to step in and do something. And there is a benefit. There's a benefit to whoever's in the administration in terms of votes, and particularly union votes. So it's not a fair comparison to say that, oh, Bain Capital, some of the companies they couldn't save. Are there some companies that the government couldn't save? Yeah, like Solyndra. That was a good investment for our taxpaying money, half a $3 trillion. Awesome. Good, good job. Look at all those jobs lost. Look at all the jobs that were temporarily created and then lost because this administration really doesn't care about using your money for bad investments. So we're just going to have to use the president's record to say, you have sliced and diced companies and cut jobs, and you've done it to the military in order to reduce the federal deficit. Yeah, the federal deficit, but we won't cut any union jobs. Now, when he said he's going to consolidate some departments or organizations under the, say, the Commerce and Labor Department or whatever, these are all pro-business bureaucracies, and I'll admit that they're bureaucracies. I don't like any of them, really, quite honestly, but they are the ones that are pro-business and work with small businesses and large businesses to promote business growth and jobs and the economy. He didn't say he's going to reduce the amount of money being spent on these efforts. He's just going to consolidate them. Now, you'd say, well, that's streamlining and that could save money. But he hasn't said anything about asking for a smaller budget. He just wants to consolidate. He wants the budget to stay the same. You watch and see in his budget proposal, it will not cut any money out of that particular sector. For example, if there are several bureaucracies that he's going to merge under the Commerce Department will still get the same amount of money. But because they are more streamlined, they'll just be able to do more. But they're not going to let any jobs go. They're not going to let any government employees, government unionized employees go. But non-unionized? Sure, no problem. Let them go. Get out of here. Go away. All right. So those are a couple of the issues there going on that we hear talked about that are really just a bunch of baloney. So here's some tweets. If you go to the American Hour on Twitter, you can follow me and see what kind of stuff I've got to say. And sometimes I repeat some things, but I just say them a different way because you can't say much on Twitter. Here's somebody I retweeted. Red O Stone Age said, focus like a laser beam on jobs. So Obama plans busy weekend of movie watching. And there's a link there, and I'm sure it's some link that says that he's got some plan to do that, whatever. I said Congressman Alan West was absolutely right about the Marines pissing on the Taliban. Shut up. I added the word hell. Shut the hell up. You haven't been in war. You don't know what it's like. These kids are young. Yeah, it wasn't right. But then you get the left. Oh, this is disgraceful and despicable. Not disgraceful and despicable. Shouldn't have happened. But look at the kind of crap they've been going through over there, being shot at and, you know, not having the equipment they ought to have and getting legs blown off and not the support from this administration that they should. Yeah, we got them out of there. That's great. That was going to happen anyway, but good for them. Good for the administration getting us out of Iraq. But look at what they've had to go through. This is not a big deal. It is not. Unless you've served, I don't want to hear anything from you about it. Here we go, another one. Obama insisted on cutting jobs, and this was the General Motors deal where they hired a consulting firm to decide which dealerships to cut, and the administration insisted on cutting dealerships. It wasn't about like, well, we need some independent analysis to determine if we should cut jobs. No, we insist on cutting jobs. Oh, wow. Okay. Because you know what? A dealership owner and his sales force, they're not unionized. They're not working for General Motors. They're just basically outside contractors. Them we can get rid of, but none of the unionized people at General Motors. We can't lose any of those. Let's see. Getting back to Obama class warfare. Of course, that was a show that we did last week, so you can review that. Here's an article. I don't remember the specific article, but again, go look on Twitter, our account. The racist in chief plays the race card. And that's what he does. He's good at that, and we're going to see him play it more and more and more. We've got this liberal commentator saying that Iowa was too white. Too white? Okay, well, which states are too black? Which ones are too brown? Let's see. One person that I like to retweet is CosmosNet. She has some good stuff on there, good articles to take a look at. And a decade after No Child Left Behind, time for a right turn in education. Yeah, 30 years of pumping more and more money into education. And what do we have to show for it? The same kind of grades, the same kind of graduation rates, and the same poor performance overall. Let's see. Now, that's enough of the twittering. The other thing we were going to talk about tonight are some of the other candidates. You know, Newt Gingrich had some really good lines in that last debate. I'll let you go look it up, but when he talks about helping create jobs and starting with the youth and teaching them the value of having a job, et cetera, he talks about the one I liked was the quote about from Andrew Jackson, who was wounded in a War of 1812, a British, I think it was by a British saber, I think is what he said. And what did Andrew Jackson have to say about our enemy? How we should handle our enemy? Kill him. I've got a quote from George Patton, and this is really kind of somewhat paraphrased and a little bit twisted, but it's the way we win wars is we kill people. And the more we kill, the quicker we win. And that's the truth of it. War's ugly. We don't want to get into it, but if we're going to have enemies that attack us and cause problems, then it's just best to eliminate them, get it over with. So tomorrow night, we're going to talk more about the candidates in specifics and see what else is going on in the news. And I'll have some more information about the Rick Santorum campaign and some details about some of his issues. One of the things that we've covered before, but I'm going to cover it again. When we say that he supported, when it's put out there that he supported a Democrat running for Senate, that particular Democrat was on the House or the Senate Judiciary Committee and was a proponent of confirming Justice Alito. Where would we be today without Justice Alito? He has been a good friend of the Constitution and our nation. So that's precisely why he did that. It was a tactical move. The Republican that was running against him was not going to be on the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that was, so the loss of that Democrat, and his name's escaping me right now, Arlen Specter, loss of that Democrat was going to hurt the chances of getting Alito confirmed. So that's why he went out and supported him. And the gentleman who ended up taking Specter's place later on when Specter left is he's supposed to be a conservative, but then he confirmed Sotomayor, who's an absolute leftist racist person. And I say that as a American of Hispanic heritage. She's a racist. She's a Hispanic racist is what she is. And she's incompetent as well. So we've got the gentleman who's the other senator now in the state of Pennsylvania who supported confirming her. Thanks. So not such a great conservative after all. And so he gets bashed for not supporting him in that particular race against Arlen Specter. And Specter, though, did vote for Alito in the confirmation hearings, or at least the committee hearings, and Alito made it to the Senate confirmation. So that was very, very important. So just because you can't look at the stuff on the surface. You can't look at the stuff on the surface. Some very, very complicated stuff going on. And the bottom line is, what is the ultimate goal? What is the big picture? And Rick Santorum has that big picture and has made those tough choices and tough calls that a senator is going to have to make. It's a tough thing to do. And you're always going to be criticized, but I know that senators have a tougher job than congressmen. They're representing an entire state, not just a district, a congressional district. So it's a tough thing to do. So in any case, hey, thanks for joining us tonight. Let's find a good little quote or a soundbite here to kind of finish the night up for, and then we'll. And we'll call it a night, and we'll work on this tomorrow. We'll go over the candidates in more detail, and we'll also talk about what the latest lie of the left is and my personal Republican response to their false choices. But here's one of my favorites.
Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected. Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected.
Oh, that's right. Isn't the Keystone Pipeline shovel ready? And I forgot to mention this. About a year ago, I started writing letters at the behest of some different organizations, both to Hillary Clinton at the State Department that was had been reviewing for some time and was getting ready to wrap it up, the Keystone Pipeline. The Canadian Trans-Canadian Pipeline Company or whatever applied for the rights to put in the Keystone Pipeline through the U.S., coming from Canada, bringing oil down to Texas and, I believe, one Midwest state. About 3 years ago, in fact, it was over 3 years ago, the State Department has been reviewing it and came to its conclusions after 3 years, and then the president decided to sit on it. He didn't want to have to make a decision. He's a, you know, sideline, sidebencher, don't want to act on anything, don't want to do anything kind of a guy if it's a little controversial with his left-wing nutjob base. So he thought he would just delay it until after the election. Then he could screw the left wing and probably would approve it. But Canada's not waiting around. So this has been reviewed. Now when the Republicans in this continuing resolution, you know, to fund the government and extend the payroll payment holiday where you don't have to pay fully into your own Social Security trust fund, as the Democrats have told us for 75 years, extended it 2 months. They put in there that the president has 60 days to review. And what did the president say today? 60 days isn't enough time to review this. Wait a minute. It's been reviewed for the last 3 years. The State Department's been reviewing it for the last 3 years and essentially gave its approval. And now he unilaterally is saying, nah, there's too many things to consider here, and 60 days is enough time. Well, 3 years wasn't enough time. When is going to be enough time? We would reduce our oil dependence on Iran and Venezuela both by 45%. Now, Leon Panetta a few weeks ago said that we don't want to go in and bomb Iran over this nuclear bomb issue, even if they have one, because we're about to get one, because, and get this, nothing to do with security and securing the region from the nut jobs in Iran, but because it would hurt our economy by raising oil prices. Wow, would hurt our economy by raising oil prices. But let's see, if we implemented the Keystone Pipeline, then it wouldn't, would it? But we don't want to do that because it's not, Keystone's not really key to our national security, and it's not key to getting off of oil dependence. Let me read you a couple things. I just watched a movie last night called, what was it? It's the George Clooney movie, The Ides of March. And he got in there doing his typical, you know, Democrat stumping and false choices, but said, we need to stop buying oil from countries that don't like us. Well, that's TransCanada Keystone Pipeline would help us do exactly that, but no, not important. The next thing he said was, and in 10 years, we need to not even be driving around gasoline cars. Well, first of all, anybody, I have an engineering degree, anybody with any brains whatsoever and any experience, you can't make this massive transition from gasoline vehicles to all battery-driven vehicles in 10 years. It's not possible. It's not possible. California on three occasions tried mandating a percentage of vehicles that must be electric cars. They started at first in the 90s, twice in the 90s, and then early 2000s mandated 10% of all cars sold in California, all new cars sold, must be electric. And they could never achieve it, could never achieve it. And that's a liberal state. Okay, so it's loony to think that we could make that transition. But I would throw this out there for all the libtards that might be listening, and especially George Clooney with his high school degree. Where do we get the lithium for all of the batteries that go in all of the electric cars that we have in the U.S.? All. Not most, not some, all. Where do we get those batteries, the lithium, to make those batteries? Bolivia. Yeah, the Marxist socialist country Bolivia that's on great speaking and relation terms with Cuba and Venezuela. And who else we got down there that's wacky? I think Ecuador's gotten a little bit socialistic. They've been somewhat, but more so now. Yeah, Bolivia. So according to George Clooney, we should get off of all oil, period, within 10 years and have our entire electric car dependence completely on the country of Bolivia. That's just genius. That'll solve all our problems. Second of all, where are we going to get all that electricity? Because we're going to need a whole lot more electricity. Nuclear power plants, bad, 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 can't do that. Coal, we got to shut all these coal plants down. There won't be any electricity to charge our electric cars in 10 years if all we're driving are electric cars. It's just lunatic, stupidity, ridiculous thinking, absolutely ridiculous. It's not a bad goal to move forward and get away from foreign oil and even get away from combustion vehicles. That's great. It's not going to happen in 10 years. But here we are saying no to the Keystone Pipeline, which is one way to help us move that direction. Absolutely. And then the other thing that he said in that movie, and this is just an absolute false choice. I'm surprised President Obama hasn't said that. We need to stop the distribution of wealth to the wealthy. Now, I'd like to know when the government gives money to the wealthy. Where does it give money to the wealthy? Oh, wait. I think we gave $500 billion to Solyndra, and several of the investors in that company were wealthy donors to the Obama campaign. Yeah, I guess there is a way to give money to the rich, the government distributing money to the rich. Now, generally, the rich are able to make their own money, especially when the government gets out of the way. And a lot more people get rich when the government gets out of the way. A lot more people. But the left's idea of going after the wealthy is to bring them down to everybody else's level instead of trying to elevate everybody up to their level. That's not a good thing, elevating everybody to their level, because then nobody would be dependent on government. And they are so needy. They need so badly those of us out there, those of us in the middle class, dependent on them in one way or another, in one way or another. So that's the Keystone Pipeline. I started writing letters to the Secretary of State, other organizations. I wrote a opinion piece in one of the Florida newspapers about it. And here we have it. The president says, nope, I know better than the rest of you. The guy that can't manage his own finances properly. So there we have it. We'll talk more about this stuff tomorrow. Thanks for joining us tonight. Paula won't be with us tomorrow either. Maybe I can find somebody else to join in with us. I'll actually work on that because I know some other nice people that could join in and help me co-host. But otherwise, we'll see you tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Thursday. Keep an eye on what's going on out there. Stay safe. And as Paula would always say, a big shout out to our troops and those that have given the ultimate sacrifice. We thank you and your families. And you'll never know, and of course we'll never know what you've gone through, but thanks for all that you do. All right, everybody, we will see you tomorrow night, 7 p.m.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.